Hail and hello, everyone. Welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, a Midgard Musings production. Join me, Jesse, your host, as we discuss random heathen-related topics and various other things in an attempt to find where, if any, heathen worldviews can be applied. You can support this podcast by clicking on the Linktree link in the description or show notes. You can also follow me on all of my social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and become a patron on Patreon. Join me every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Central on all major podcast streaming platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and many, many more. If you wish to have your voice heard on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, you can dial in to 615-671-9832. Thank you all once again for listening to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. Enjoy, and hail to you all.
Hello, hello, hello. Hail and welcome, everyone, back to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, and another week down for us. Hope you guys enjoyed last week's episode with Haran O'Shea over at the Weirding Way, Mythmaker Productions, all that fun stuff. Really awesome guy. Had a great time on that episode. Got another guest lined up today. An old friend. He's been on this podcast a couple of times. Well, he's been, see if he's been on the podcast more than once, but he's definitely been featured on Midgard Musings more than once. He's been on the podcast at least one time. And he used to pop in for like random live streams and stuff on the YouTube channel. And he's got a really neat outlook on things. He's he practices a bit of like occult type beliefs, but it's heavily rooted in like Enochian keys and Enochian magic or whatever. So I always referred to him as my Enochian brother. And he is a brother to me. He is, although not pagan or heathen, he is definitely someone who I would consider kin, you know, or kith as an extension of the kin circle. And he has been to every one of my hosted Yule events that our tribe holds. So he is like an honorary, you know, tribal member. He has contributed to said rituals over the years. We've spoken many a word over the horn, as it were, right? We've exchanged a lot of wisdom and weird, tied a lot of weird with each other and exchanged the gift of knowledge in that way. So, you know, sometimes I remember some evenings where I would sit with him and he would, we would just be talking, and then, you know, the hours go by and you lose track of time. So Richard McCune is his name. You've, like I said, been introduced to him at least once before if you're following the podcast. And if you're not yet following my podcast, what are you doing? Give that follow button a smash, give that like button a smash, you know, interact with the platforms, however it is that you capture this podcast, whether you listen to it or watch it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the YouTube channel here, wherever, however. I think I'm being distributed on every known platform that I can think of. I know I'm on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Amazon Music, even believe that or not. So yeah, you guys, whatever, however you're capturing the podcasts, why don't you let me know down in the comments or over in the show notes. Let me know where you're listening to me from. And if you do want to have your voice heard on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, like I tell you in the intro every day or every time this gets aired, you can always call into that hotline. The number's always active. You can just call 615-671-9832, leave a voicemail. And if you're just, you know, a little bit shy and you don't want your voice heard, or, you know, if you do call and you just want to remain anonymous, you can say, don't say my name and I won't. But if you are more of the written word type of person and you'd rather send an email in, you can always do that too. MidgardMusingsTN@gmail.com. So yeah, another long, hot, muggy summer week here in the hot state of Tennessee, and it's pretty much been like that for a while now. I don't think we're going to see any reprieve. But yeah, nothing else really much going on over here on my end. No major things to report on, as it were. There's the Middle Tennessee Heathens meetup, which is happening here in Murfreesboro this Saturday. Be sure to, if you're interested in coming out, check out the Facebook event, which is going to be down in the description and show notes of the podcast. It's going to be at the McAllister's Deli on Medical Center Parkway in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Come by starting around noon. Grab yourself a sandwich, bowl of soup, salad, what have you, whatever suits your fancy. Come out, say hi, hang out with us for a bit. Let's go ahead and welcome Richard in. We're going to be lighting our incense soon as he joins us. And the topic of today's discussion is going to be a story that he has to tell of an experience that he had of the near-death kind. He had quite a interesting thing happen to him last year, quite a scary thing happened to him last year. Pulled through amazingly well. He's back to his old self, as it were, but maybe not quite his old self. I think things like near-death experiences can really change a man, change a person. So yes, we will be talking about his NDE. So if that bothers you, and if that's not your thing, then now's your chance to tune away. But I hope you listen, and I hope you stay, a part of this whole thing, because I think we have a pretty fun episode lined up, just the way the discussion can go with it. So without further ado, let's welcome in Richard McCune. All right, now here we are back again with the big dick over here. And that's
Dick Meister.
That's not an attempt to try to stroke your ego or anything else for that matter. It's just your name. But yeah, guys, Richard McCune's back here, as you can tell. And I think we got a pretty neat podcast lined up for us today. While we get into it, I've got, the incense thing here that I'm gonna just fire up. But I was telling everybody before, Richard, that you're for those that are like new, right, that haven't seen you before or known you before the other podcasts, what's your deal, man? Like, what's your background? I said an occultist, kind of an Enochian, and
I don't know,
it's hard to really like, I guess, come up with a name for it. So what would you call it?
I'm okay with the Enochian thing, because I do practice some Enochian magic, but I personally like to pull from a few different things. If some of my views sound a little Christian, if my views sound a little satanic, it's because or kind of magical, kind of woo-woo, using crystals, yeah. It's because I tend to pull and make my own belief system ideas and so on and so forth.
You got your hands in all kinds of different pots, I guess, right?
Many, many toes and many different waters.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, but I've said to you and I've said to other people before, the religion or how we, I guess, manifest our spirituality, our religious beliefs, whatever, matters very little when it comes down to like true friendship.
Exactly.
You and I have shared a lot of thoughts and ideas and just, general, I think, good wisdom, wholesome ideas and stuff. And we've sat and we've had conversations that have lasted hours without us even
realizing
that it's taken, the time flies by. So, yeah.
And we're at a point where you've accepted me into your tribe, and we look at each other as brothers, right. And you've said before, and I think you've even done podcasts on it, where you don't throw that brother
right
thing around to just everybody. You know,
no, so. Yeah, indeed. I mentioned it a little bit in the kind of like the intro parts of this episode here today. Is, you know, all of the events that you've, like, there almost every Yule, I think, well, pretty bad, every Yule event that we've hosted here, like, you've been a part of, and you've been a part of those rituals and then other rituals too, you know, where we've you know, beyond brotherhood, like, you're like that honorary tribal member, you know, always welcome around the hearth fire and to participate in our things because of the contributions, you know, the exchange of that gift of wisdom, gift of knowledge, the gift of experience, you know, all the things that you can't really like pick up and hold as a gifted item, but nonetheless, they are gifts, I feel.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So yeah, you're absolutely brother to me, man. And
yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah. We had a wild thing happen to you not too long ago. Almost a year ago now, believe it or not, how fast that time flew by. Yeah. But I gave the people a little bit of a hint, except that or to the extent that I said, you know, he had an experience of the near death variety.
Yeah. You
know? So I kind of gave people that warning. It's like, hey, if stuff like this, you know, triggers you or makes you uncomfortable, like, turn away now, because it's going to be one of those podcasts, right? We're going to be talking about stuff like that. I have really nothing else to lead up to introduce it. So I guess, why don't you just kind of start from the beginning and go wherever it goes, man, far down the rabbit hole you want to go.
I'll just tell the whole thing, front to back. And side to side. So my wife and I took a small vacation to Wilmington, North Carolina, around November. We did, because we love the beach. We love the beach even no matter what time of the year. The water, the ocean, the sounds, it's very comforting. So we go there, we have a good time, we have friends, hang out, and then we like to take a stop by the beach and just kind of sit there and just listen to the water. It's very soothing and relaxing. And one of our trips there, we went out with some friends and I ate and drank, and we got there Friday, and then the next day I started feeling like a little bit uncomfortable, the feeling you get when you have an upset stomach, you know, like you might get a little bit of food poisoning, like a little sick to your stomach. And later on that night, that Saturday night, I was feeling like butt. And my wife decided, and her friend decided, to go and have dinner and everything. Well, I sat at home and watched Hallmark movies on the TV that I didn't know how to change the channel to. Oh, so, man. I'm stuck
there. You had to been really sick if you were watching Hallmark movies.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm here. This is it. This is what I'm.
Man, I can't believe you survived such a near death experience of watching Hallmark movies, man.
Yeah. I think it was like 3 to 5 hours. That's what it felt like. Man. But I was feeling so bad. Like, it could have been just 2 hours, but anyway, it was just bad enough. And so my wife, bless her heart, she loves Hallmark movies, especially around mine Christmas
too.
Time.
Oh, mine too. So,
yeah.
Lifetime original movies and the Hallmark Channel, man. It's like, it's the same regurgitated storylines every year, but she loves them. And, you know, hey, whatever, you know.
So I'm sitting there watching and my stomach's churning and feeling awful and everything. And then Sunday we decided to leave and we came back and then I was feeling the same way for, you know, a few days and just getting progressively worse. Fast forward to Friday, my stomach is bloated. Look like I'm 9 months pregnant and I'm throwing up and I'm like, this is bad. So we're like, let's go to the those urgent care type places, and maybe they can kind of do a CT scan. Or we get there, they wouldn't do a CT scan. They took blood work, but it nothing came up suspicious to where they were like, oh, you have to go to the ER. But then again, here I am, looking like I'm 9 months pregnant. I didn't have any pain, associated like you would have with rupturing your appendix. So I didn't have any pain on your right side or anything like that. But I had a little bit of pain, like in the middle, but it wasn't like bent over in pain kind of a feeling. It was just more like a discomfort. And so the doctor comes in, looks at me, feels around, and he is definitely bloated, but I think he just needs to fart it out. That's his exact words were, I think you just need to sit on your husband and he'll just fart it out.
Wow. And hey, man, I could have done that, man. And I don't have a doctorate degree. I don't even have an associate's degree. I could have told you that. Yeah, just sit on them, let them fart it out.
Right. Damn. Like that was advice from a physician. You know, didn't even say I should go to the ER or anything. So we were left very suspicious. Like, we don't buy that. And yeah. So she took me to one of those hydration places because I was sweating. I was kind of in and out, and maybe like hydrating would help me a little bit. And so we went there, and one of the nurses on staff was like, "He doesn't look good. I think he needs to go to the hospital." And shortly after that, we went to the ER, and they take me back to a CT scan. In the middle of the CT scan, I'm like vomiting and everything, and vomiting like on the way back. It was getting progressively worse. And the surgeon came in and was like, well, we're going to perform emergency surgery. We think there might be a blockage or something like that. Needless to say, they opened me up and they noticed I was septic, and so they lifelighted me to Vanderbilt Hospital, which is, if anyone in Nashville, that's like the best hospital, the best care.
Yeah. And, so you went back for the scan. You're vomiting on the way back to the get scanned.
Mm-hmm.
Did they get the results of your scan to determine we need to cut you open, or was that just like a, we think we know what's going on, it's best for us to just skip that part? Like,
it was very evident that there's really something going on. They took a good look at the CT scan. They noticed like a lot of bowel type stuff going on. So they cut me open, and then when they cut me open, they realized that I was septic, so they washed me out, and then they lifelighted me to Vanderbilt. I guess that's a part of this, from what I remember. I the only thing I remember out of this is
You weren't conscious.
I was unconscious. the last conscious thought I could hear was the was the helicopter blades going, and then I passed out again. And then a week later, I woke up, and everything was explained to me. When I've gone through, my appendix had ruptured. The reason why you didn't feel anything or have any pain associated was because your appendix was not where it would normally be for somebody. They said it was actually in the middle and cushioned behind something. So I didn't have any pain or anything. So I would not have known. And the only reason I was even concerned was because why am I feel like I'm going to pass out at any moment? And my body, I was in shock. I was in septic shock. So my body was shutting down. And those feelings coupled with being looking like I was 9 months pregnant. Yeah, like I said, it was right. all that bowel. I was full, you know, I was full septic. They had to do 3 surgeries apparently, to repair everything. One of the surgeries involved being what they call a bowel resection, which means I lost 19 inches of intestine.
Which intestine, the large intestine? Yeah, that one, Jesse.
that one.
You ever pay attention and you know science class? You watch a bit. Watch Bill Nye. So the large intestine.
It's all your. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know that part.
They took about a foot and a half away. That's all you know.
Yeah, almost 2 feet, and you know, I had a big open wound and everything, and it wasn't a staple everything shut kind of a procedure. They had to put you on a thing called a wound vac, and this wound vac is what starts closing everything up. They stuff you with a bunch of foam, and then they turn on the machine and it sucks everything in, and then there's a thing that fluid to flow through so you can.
They stuffed you with foam?
Yeah,
fill
in the scar.
Like a Build-A-Bear? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, they stuffed you with foam.
Just shove it up your ass and then just, you know, shake it around a little bit.
I watched them do it. Like the first time they did I was high as hell on Dilaudid. And
that'll do it.
And then they had they were cutting foam and everything and just kind of stuffing me in like a little teddy bear. And then they had this cord that they attached to the machine, and apparently it helps fluid drainage and stuff like that, and just gross and everything. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, Richard, we're going to turn it on. I was like, okay. And before I could finish saying okay, they turned it on, and you feel like your soul was coming out of your body, it was very painful. And that was 3 times a week, while I was in the hospital. And then by the time I left the hospital, near close to Christmas, all in all, I was in the hospital from November 19th until December, like a week or so before Christmas, mm-hmm. something like that. So
damn near a month. Right out a month or so. Damn.
Because I opted to do physical therapy and stuff like that. I lost a bunch of weight. Mm-hmm. When I went in, I was around 230. When I came out of the hospital, when I woke up, I was around 188, and when I left the hospital, I was around 190 or so, and I was on this wound vac until February of this year, until about the end of February, And so I was on the wound vac thing for about 3 months.
Damn.
Yeah. And the going to physical therapy, they would change my wound vac there. I had to learn to get my balance right, you know, and get some muscles working again. And I couldn't do any ab or anything. I couldn't do anything to gain giraffes because the scar is literally running from just below my sternum to just about the groin area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all the way down your belly and everything.
And then you basically were like, you got dissected in a way. Just yeah. Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Damn, that's scary. Enough. I mean, yeah. And, you know, I'm like reliving this whole experience just from hearing you talk about it, because I vividly remember obviously where I was when your wife let us know, because we were in North Carolina too.
Yeah.
At the time. And so, you know, I think you guys were out there the week before we were. And so like my wife and I had gone out to visit friends and family in North Carolina. And then I get this message saying that, you know, you're in the hospital, you were septic, and there's an emergency appendicitis, you know, they're removing your appendix. And I was like, holy shit, you know, and just kind of listening and following along with the progress of stuff. It was like, this was bad. Like, it was bad. And, you know, knowing what the outcome could have been, you know, I was like freaking out, man. I'm like, here I am in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm like, am I going to have to, you know, and not to get visceral, but I'm like, am I going to come home and bury my friend, you know, like bury my brother. Like, that's kind of the shit that I was thinking about. I'm like, no fucking way. Like, no, that ain't happening, man. He's got to pull through this, you know? And so, yeah, like reliving this, the emotions of it all right now for me is.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
It was. And,
Not to downplay. I mean, you're the one who went through it. So, like, but
it's really interesting. And this is where I get, I guess, into the near death, experience type of things. You know, it's surprising. You would think that some people would be traumatized in some sort of way coming out of it, being in the hospital that long and being in the hospital bed for over 2 weeks, and a week of your life is gone.
Literally part of you has gone away. I mean, that, you know, almost 2 feet of your intestine, you lost 45 pounds, 50 pounds. I mean, just like crazy changes of your physical body. Right.
Yeah. The hardest part of the whole experience was I was on a lot of drugs. I was on fentanyl, propofol, Michael Jackson mixture, basically, and all sorts of other stuff, feeding tube, what's that big tube they put? I can't remember the name of it. It's like a tube that goes all the way down your throat and you know, they got to pull it out once you're healed enough, and you know that.
Yeah. There's no talking while. I mean, the thing's like literally just shoved down your gullet, pretty much.
Yeah. And I was tied to I was restrained during that 2 weeks in ICU because I had an open wound. They didn't want my hands going near. They didn't want to take that risk at all. I don't blame them. So I was restrained. And I remember, like, getting the nurse's attention. So you can't speak. So there's a suction to help suction out, you know, stuff in the belly, like bile and fluid and stuff like that, you know. Well, I had trouble finding it a lot. And so I had to get their attention and try to get them to get the thing to suck everything out. And so I would, this is going to be gross, I would intentionally make myself throw up so they would come over and do what needed to be done. You know, it sounds awful. It's the worst ever. But then coming off of those drugs was rough. I remember the first couple days I was awake and a little bit more cognizant. Sleeping was very hard. I was having these weird dreams. I remember telling you about this. I'm asleep in that feeling of that sinking feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like where you're losing ground in a way and you're kind of like falling but or slipping.
And I was having dreams of being going down like a dirt tunnel. And I kept seeing different symbols. Some symbols I recognized, some I didn't so much. Some symbols I recognized were from my face that I've come across, and some symbols we came across from yours, especially I definitely remember seeing Freya's symbol. I definitely remember seeing Odin. But I also saw, I follow Astaroth in my faith, and I saw his symbol. So all these different things, that sinking feeling and that feeling that if I let myself go to sleep, that I'll just keep falling, that I'll just keep going and never come back up. So I would force myself awake. And I don't know if it's the result of the drugs, yeah, and being messed up that I had these dreams, but these dreams were very real to me. And
this is all while you're in the ICU or recovering, yeah, from the surgery. Like this is all during that.
Yeah.
Time. Yeah.
This was after that first week. So I guess, that first week, I was completely out. So I was awake and cognizant. And the first couple days after being awake and a little bit more cognizant, every time the rest of the week was rough to sleep. Like, but the first couple of days, maybe first 3 days, were like the worst because it was coming off of those really hard drugs and everything,
yeah,
that I was on, and having those dreams. They were the same dream, like I swear, like 2 days in a row. And then after that was just I hate hospitals, so like I would probably sleep a few hours and then wake up. It was kind of normal for a little while at that point. But I wasn't having those dreams anymore. But it was that first couple days after recovering that I was having all those dreams I was just telling you about. And I remember telling you.
Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. No, it's fine. I'll save it till later. Go ahead.
Yeah, I remember those telling you those dreams and everything when it occurred, and he said it matched up when it when you were visiting your friend JM,
yeah,
in North Carolina, and yeah.
Now that was like the timing of things were so I don't know, like very interesting the way things lined up, right? Because right before we went to North Carolina, I went on my shamanic journey with Dingo and Patrick, and we did our, you know, ritual out there in around Arvay, and it was an all night shamanic experience. And then, you know, literally less than a week later, I'm in North Carolina and finding out about your situation, and that's the weekend that I was at JM's, you know, where we held a little ritual of our own, you know, where there was, you know, time spent around the fire, there was drumming, there was, it was again, a very spiritual and very ritualistic experience coming off of the coattails of an intense mind altering, you know, altered state of consciousness experience that I had the week before. So I'm literally like reeling from the after effects of that experience and still not quite back to my normal self. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I was still really not all here. Like there were still, I was still very new to like this human experience after having gone through something so jarring, you know? And then again, to find out about all that. And I was like, I think in a way that experience going on that journey and then being in North Carolina with JN and stuff, I think everything included helped me to kind of process what was going on with you in a holistic way, knowing and understanding the severity of it, but not like losing my absolute mind, thinking about the consequent or what could ultimately happen here. Like, what are we facing? Right. It was almost like, I get it. I understand it. But I was like, and it's weird to say, cause again, I wasn't the one that experienced it, but I was like at peace with it in a way, you know, like,
yeah,
he's going to be okay. It's going to be rough, but having that moment, having that time and that experience really helped me to connect to the bigger picture. I don't know, relativity of life and our place in this universe and where we land and where we fall and just how kind of just it is what it is, right? Like, you know,
yeah,
whatever's to be is going to be, but I'm prepared for it either way. But I don't know, like just thinking back about that moment and having the memories of how I was feeling, still thinking about like, man, you know, this could happen. Like this is a possibility. Glad it didn't, of course, but you know, and I was wondering, like, when you were talking about the dreams and the feelings of falling or slipping into this chasm or this tunnel or this, you know, how you described it as like this dirt, almost like a mine shaft, I'm thinking of, and like in ways of, to describe it, like this just earth ridden.
And the dream, to clarify a little bit more, this dream I was having, it wasn't just a one thing and then it was over. I would go back to sleep and then it would start up again. It was continuous, same thing for the entire night. I would keep waking up and I would be like, okay, I'm here. I'm breathing. All right. Then I'd fall, drift off, go back to sleep. It would start up, get this feeling. And then I would force myself awake. It was like this for 2 days.
So I was wondering, like, did when you would come back, right? When you said you kind of like would force yourself back awake, was it an abrupt reentry into the room and the space around you, or was it as much of a going down this hole and now I'm coming back up this hole to get back to my conscious self?
It was immediate. It was abrupt. It was very abrupt. And but that feeling of going up the tunnel was that quick as well. So it's just that hole just coming back up. Yeah.
Huh. So do you think that because I know from, NDEs, you know, near death experiences, they're very widely documented. Everybody has different recollections of what they would refer to as an NDE. And I know that this podcast is to talk about that. Do you think that the dreams after the initial results of, like, you know, the stomach distension, the vomiting, being in surgery, and then not remembering anything until you walk back up. Do you think that what you were experiencing was this drifting of your conscious self into death? Like, do you think that that's what those dreams were, or those visions, or whatever you want to call them? Do you think that that would be what you would refer to as a near-death experience, that it was like your body almost being like, it's time to go, and you're like, no, I'm not gonna go?
That's what it really felt like to me. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm not gonna or anything, but like it really felt like that to me. People are gonna be like, oh, I don't care what people think. I'm gonna let my old man, kind of come out here for a minute, but like I don't really care what people who believe in it or don't believe in it. I don't care what they think, because they wouldn't. It's one of those things you just wouldn't know unless you're going through it yourself. So I'm just gonna just be matter of fact about that. You know, so it was very, I felt like I was leaving this place. My energy was going about going somewhere else, and I could feel it, and I was not ready for it. I didn't like it. It wasn't, I just wasn't my time. And that's the really my thoughts on it. After I've recovered and everything, I Googled, and don't ever do this. I Googled like what sepsis, the survival rate. It was under 50%. Like 30% of people who get sepsis live to tell about it. And maybe the reason why I survived is because I wasn't older or anything, because some of those statistics were for people who are older and let it go. They usually don't make it. Maybe age played into it. I don't know. I just knew it was not my time, and I got a lot of things I needed that I wanted to accomplish. I'd just been married at that point for about 6 months.
Right. So yeah, man, what a hell of a way to, what a hell of a start to your first year of marriage, man. You go ahead and you rupture your appendix, man. Look, if she don't stick with you for the rest of your life after going through that with you, then man, then something's wrong, man. Cause kudos to her for being so strong and being there where they're at. I love Charlie to death, and she's good for you, man. And she's been an awesome component to the life of Richard, now your lives together. Like, what an incredible story. And, you talk about like, your physical age and whatnot being a factor, no doubt, right? That being a middle-aged, somewhat healthy, right? Guy, whatever. Like, you're not decrepit, you're well put together. You had a healthy youth, like you're active and you're swimming and all that other kind of stuff. Yeah. I also wonder if, because of the visions that you had and all that and the experiences and having some sort of, at least to some degrees, a subconscious understanding of what that was, right? You maybe didn't have it like all mapped out or whatever in the moment, but at least having some sort of, again, subconscious realization of what it was because of your spirituality and your history and the practices that you've had over years, because this Enochian thing, right, this isn't just like you woke up the other day and thought, yeah, this is what I want to be. Like, this has been a part of your life for a while, at least, right?
Yeah.
Do you think do you think that your, not just your physical health, but your spiritual health contributed to your survival and not succumbing to that
transition? It's very well,
into the other? Yeah.
Yeah. It's possible.
I mean, because I just think of it as like, why else would you think that I'm not ready for that yet? I have other things I need to do, and I'm not going to slip into
if
this.
If I hadn't seen the symbols I was seeing when I was having this experience, I probably would have wrote it off as something, just a weird dream.
The effects of the drugs.
But because I'm familiar with these symbols, I knew that there was other things at play here.
I firmly believe it. I think that with the combination of your path and then just having the experiences that we've had together and the talks that we've had, the conversations that we've held over many a horn of mead and other libations, and I was just that whole camaraderie, the whole experience, right? It's almost like, you know, there was parts of all of that that, mm-hmm. whether you know it or not, or whether you think about it or not, almost in a way prepares you for something like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's, you know, the death or the illness of a loved one, or whether it's your own mortality taking hold and facing things like those, are the foundations, I think, in the building blocks for preparing oneself to deal with it, right? The unseen, the unknown, the thing beyond what we know is our mortal experience and what we see and hear and taste and touch and all that, just in those, basic senses.
The other reason why I feel other things were at play were the timing of when you were there and doing your experience with JM, and also I have another friend who I think I've talked about it on before about my Enochian magic a little bit. I had a person who served as sort of a medium for me in the beginning that would help me, she would channel, or served as sort of a conduit. So they could speak through her and everything. And that takes a lot of energy and a lot of toll on someone. That same person, reached out while I was gone as well. So there was you, and then there was, my friend, and of course everybody else that were in their thoughts, all that stuff played into it.
A lot of energy is being put out there, man, in this, the universe, you want to call it, the spirit realm. Like, there was a lot of,
yeah. And like I've said before, I've said this before many times, what you put out in the universe will return in kind. That is so true here. So
yeah, I don't know, man, like my, and you know, a lot of my own growth and in my spirituality, that where I've grown and what I've become has found its place in not so much like the unseen, well, not so much like the unseen in terms of like the gods, right, or what you might consider like the divine or sacred beings. It's found its place in the things that are seen, like the earth and nature and things, and realizing that there are spirits all around us. They take form they take form of, you know, a heron or an eagle or the rocks and the trees and the water and the, you know, the trails and the nature and stuff. Like there's literally a multitude of sentient beings like we are, but just in different form existing all around us, and tapping into those, you know, like tapping into those places and connecting, reconnecting back to those places has opened up such a window for me in realizing just where I am in this big universe. As you say, the things that you put out, you get back. It doesn't make it so, like, it's vast and there's this void that, like, kind of blows your mind. You think just the size of it all and us in comparison as beings. But at the same time, it's also like, but I am a part of this and I am able to influence this and I can manipulate things and make things happen because I've done it and I've seen it and it's happened. And so, you know, I don't know, man, it's like it's such a wild thing to know that you're not nobody here. We're not nobodies. Yeah. We are powerful beings, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have the ability to do some really powerful shit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
and being a part of that in different ways, you know?
Exactly.
Especially when it comes to like the mortality aspect of things, you know, like suffering loss, but seeing the life that still continues to exist despite that loss, right? I mean, there are more times than I can count on my hand that my wife's brother, who we, you know, his the anniversary of his passing was just last week. Mm-hmm. You know, his physical body isn't present, but he's still around. Like there, if I, because I can't count, I can count on more times than I care to think about how many times he's made himself manifest. You know, he has a daughter, our niece, that's a form of life that's tied to him, you know? So it's like just being aware of the cycles, you know? Seeing you rebound. And that's another thing I wanted to talk about, man, because like you were saying, like an event like that could severely, and I'm sure has, you know, traumatized people. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's understandable, you know, to go through such a traumatic event of nearly dying and having part of your body literally ripped out of you and all this other kind of stuff. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are, man, like playing rock shows on stage and living your best life. Right.
Yeah.
After surviving such a thing. I mean, that's iconic, man. It's legendary. And I mean that, like, I look at that, I'm shit like, damn, like what an example to set, you know, like something. Go ahead.
It's like, it's very interesting that the amount of people who responded, because I got to see all those messages, and people who followed on social media, who cared, and something like this, you know, you learn who your friends are. I'm not gonna say anything negative about it, but you learn who your friends are, and you know who's close to you, and so this has given me a different perspective on friendship and, you know, who to let in, who not to let in. There's, you know, being in the music scene, being a musician, you know, there's people I held on a pedestal, you know, for most of this life, you know, and I don't have as much people I put on a pedestal anymore, because I honestly do not need that in my life, you know. because those people I've put on a pedestal for most of my life didn't bother to reach out. And so, it, you know, it grounded me. And
puts things in perspective, right?
Mm-hmm. And and because of you learn who your friends are, it led me back into a band that I was no longer involved in. I had moved on. I had stepped away from it. I thought my time in the music scene was pretty much over. Then my appendix thing happened. And when those people, guys in the band, reached out and everything and showed support, that changed my perspective. You know, those people I was putting on a pedestal that didn't care, then the ones that I left thought I didn't care, still cared, spoke volumes to me. And when they reached out to me like, hey man, do you want to come jam? That was a fucking no-brainer in my opinion. Like, yeah, whatever happened was in the past, you know, let's do it. And now Rattle Trap got to play our first show as a band at Exit Inn, and right. checked off a bucket list item for me. And it's so amazing to sort of have this come back, if you will.
Yeah, a rebirth in a way, you know.
And I'm not just saying just from a music perspective, but a life perspective. Like I'm more into my faith as I thought. I'm not doesn't necessarily mean reading books or dancing around naked in a campfire.
I've run out of books to read, so you know I got to do something. No, I'm just kidding.
Got to do something.
Dancing around naked around the campfire is not you know, don't knock it till you try it kind of thing.
Don't knock it till you try it. Yeah. So, you know, I'm more in tune with my beliefs and my faith.
Yeah.
And my being that I've ever have, I'm a little bit more driven. I still like to be lazy because I like to be lazy as fuck. And don't get me wrong, but I'm very driven when I am involved in things. And as a musician, I'm cranking out the guitar riffs left and right. So,
well, like I say, you know, there's so much of your, like you say, you know, the near death experience, like your life is your life. And part of your life is music. You're a musician. And I don't know too many people who are legitimate musicians who would say that music is not a part of their life.
It's definitely,
right.
It's always been a part of my life, you know, whether it's sitting in the background or at the forefront. Right now it's at the forefront, you know.
That you kind of went through that kind of, like, you went through that like roller coaster of experiences, right? And the thing that kind of launched the Rattle Trap to be what it is. You could almost look at it in a way, it was like your near death was the near death that needed the thing to die and be reborn into what it is now. If you want to, I mean, that's how I look at things anyway. That's how I see it. It was like there was a time that part of you was dying. Mm-hmm. And whatever part of you that was connected to the band and in any sort of way, and then what needed to die did. And now look what has happened because of it. Like, there was this resurgence, this revitalized approach to
and
you guys play Exit In, man, like that's nuts. That's great.
And also my everything that I did in the past is in the past now, and I don't mind talking about it. I used to get very nervous and talk about it. I used to be afraid of judgment or how people would feel about me because of my past. I don't really give a shit about that anymore. What's in the past is in the past, and what I'm doing now is most important. I have a beautiful, lovely wife who takes very good care of me, and I take very good care of her. I'm surrounded by some of the best friends possible. I have a wonderful brother, as you, and I'm full. It's overflowing.
That's encouraging, man. That's inspiring. You know, that's inspirational.
Live your life to the fullest. You know, and if you run into a bump on a road, take advantage of it, you know, and, you know, don't look at the downside. Don't get depressed. I'm not traumatic because of this experience. I'm reborn because of this experience.
Yeah, man. I think a lot of people that listen and watch this podcast will, I think this whole episode, this story that you shared with the world will resonate to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. You know, everybody has a story, and how that story gets told and when that story gets shared is up to the person. And it all ties into, I think, how we write our stories, how we tell our sagas. You know, I've almost in almost every episode, or at least in multiple ways, I've said that, you know, and it's not just me. I mean, I didn't coin this phrase. It's come from a bunch of different sources, but we live in saga times. And the sagas that are being written now may not be that of a great king who led an army against, you know, oppositions, or great heroes that slew monsters, or all these sorts of things that were in the old sagas or some of these old tales and folklore. But they are nonetheless great tales, you know, the story of Richard, who came back from death and saw ancient symbols in a great tunnel where he was traveling through into darkness, and he came back into consciousness, into life, and went on to become a great scald among the people and sang and performed great songs in front of an audience and performed on stages, you know, like stuff like that, man. That is the stuff of sagas. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could position it in that way, and it's be, you know, kids would be just like, tell me the one about, you know, Richard the Gutless, whatever, you know, the man who lost his head, 2 feet of his intestine. Like, tell me that story again, right? But I don't know, man. It's like stuff like that that is inspirational, and it's stuff that I think people can take their own experiences, however big or small, and be like, wow, this guy who I don't necessarily know very well told this amazing tale of endurance and of rebirth and of, you know, meeting the challenges, the frightening reality of possibilities of death and all that, and then turned it around to become something to fuel his life, right? I think that's pretty epic.
Yeah, I really do. I may be 43 years old, but I'm not
a day over 90 then.
No,
don't look a day over 90. You must be just for men, because you have way less gray hair than I do.
I tell you what, in my last job, someone actually asked me that, and I gave a real sick and disgusting answer.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's safe for this podcast, but
you're probably, you have a healthy diet.
Well, I mean, you can also use a lot of lotion, you know what I mean? Like five times a day.
That's
so,
it.
So got to bump up the numbers, right?
that's a modest amount for a man of 43, you know, there's only so many hours in. There's only so many hours in a day when you're not, you know, shopping for life insurance and taking power naps.
Take a power nap and get up and get going again.
Yeah, you know, you got to take that. You got to pull off to the side of the road every 20 minutes for a bathroom break. You know,
as Bob Ross used to say, whenever you pound his paintbrush to the easel, he would say, "Just got to bang it out, bang it out,
got to bang it out, man." If Bob Ross said it, man, then that those are words to live by, baby. That's a mantra that I'll get behind. You know. I'm gonna shoot my happy little accidents all over the place and just bang it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Oh, dude. Well, that's great, man. I'm so glad that we got a chance to, you know, because I've talked with you obviously about this since then, and we've had our own little one-on-one or group conversations about the whole thing. But I want to thank you very much for being willing to talk about this and revisit it and be candid enough to basically just a wide audience of people to tell the story abroad and share that with people. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of folks. I really do.
Yeah. You know, I used to be very timid about talking about personal things about religion and things like that. And I'm not scared to talk about it at all anymore. I don't care how people see me when I talk about those things. I used to, but you know, you only live once.
For sure. And I mentioned this too before you came on here, that, you know, you're no stranger to the podcast. Of course, you know, we've been friends now for a long time, and our brother. So for people that are wanting to know a little bit more about Richard and his background, in the description and in the show notes, I'm going to link the last podcast episode that you were on here with me. And I'm also going to link the very first video that you came onto the channel, the YouTube channel. We sat in this very space. We had this backdrop behind us. We talked about things. It was almost like a little interview sort of thing. That's going to be linked and annotated and all that here. And so for people that want to know a little bit more about, you know, Richard and our history, as much as it's revealed in those, in that content, definitely check out the description, check out the show notes, and bring yourselves up to speed. Because from where you and I first met each other, like the channels and all that, when we first met each other, and to where we are now, like, couldn't have called it. Like, I would never have thought that this is where we would be in our friendship when we first met, you know. It was the music. And that's the crazy thing. Like, so many of my my friends and people who have become brother to me, it all started with the music scene. That was the common ground. That was the thing that started a acquaintance relationship, which blossomed into friendship, which then grew into, not everybody, by no means, not everybody, but the ones that have become brother and family to me, it's where it started.
Yeah.
That music scene, that music circle, and the ability to, I don't know, weave words through song and tell tales.
Yeah. And
it's powerful magic, my man. Like, it really is. You think about it.
Yeah, it is. And
casting spells through sound, like, it's wild.
So, you know, if anyone who's interested, feel free to go check out my new band, Rattle Trap, with two P's.
You can, we'll annotate that down there too.
Yeah.
Put it on. You got some shows coming up too, don't you?
Oh yeah, we got a bunch coming up. We got August 6th. We're playing at Bring It Back Games in Shelbyville, and then
Shovelville. You're playing in the shovel, shovel, as they say. If you're from there, you just drop all next to the letters. And you just shovel.
Shovel. And then August. No, I'm sorry. September 10th, we have another show. It's going to be our EP released party. It's going to be in Franklin at the Whiskey Room. And then we got some other shows coming up after that in September and October. So if you want to follow us,
booked out through the year.
Click on the link and like our page and like our stuff and
all that
good stuff.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people that, that listen and watch to this stuff that are in the respective Middle Tennessee areas. Right. So you guys, if you want to meet this man in person, shake his hand, buy him a water or a beer. You still drink, don't you? Right.
I still drink.
Yeah. Buy this man a beer, man. For fuck's sake, man. He almost died. Buy him a beer. Right.
Buy me a beer.
So yeah, all this stuff's going to be, annotated and stuff in the description, show notes area. You guys check it out. Rattle Trap, the videos that and podcast episodes that Richard's been on with me here. And I think that just about wraps it up. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before we tie this one off? You can hang out afterwards. I'll wrap you for a bit after the podcast, but anything else?
That's it. We all live together. We're all under the same world, same roof. Everybody just needs to respect each other and love each other. That's the best way to be. And remember, as always, everything that I've always said, everything you put out in the universe, you'll get in response, whether good karma or bad karma. That is a tenet that I always live by. I highly suggest you live by it too.
Hey man, you get what you give.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Isn't that a song?
You get
what you get.
You can't always get what you want.
That's a
different one. That's a different song. That's the wrong song.
But if you try sometime, get what you need.
Yeah. Sometimes you get appendicitis. And then you come back and, you know, tear shit up on stage at Exit Inn. And that's the actual lyrics of the song, too, by the way. I wrote them.
Tore it up at Exit Inn.
I wrote those lyrics with John Lennon and the boys from the Rolling Stones, you know.
Yeah. John Lennon.
You know those guys. And, they wore, like, Hawaiian t-shirts and they played surf rock, you know. Those guys.
And Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger, yeah.
Yeah.
They named the submarine after him, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think they named a liquor after that. Could that be
liquor,
right? Or
liquor. Damn near killed her. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and non-binary folks of all ages and shapes and sizes and whatever. It's been real. Been real fun. Thank you, Richard, for being my guest and my friend and my brother, as always, here. Always. So for everybody that's tuning in and watching, check the description for all the stuff that we already talked about. And until the next episode, may the gods continue to notice you and may your ancestors smile upon you. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.